wheels and they're all scratched.
Sound just like a record on a phonograph.
Gold records on the wall.
Keep those records playing.
I am a DJ.
Today on The Vinyl Experience, an encore presentation of a visit with author Keith Elliott Greenberg, whose book, The Day John Lennon Died, chronicles the events of December 8th, 1980. We'll do that for the next hour, hearing Lennon's music and the music from that time that inspired him to get back into the game. I'm Paul Cavalcante, and this is The Vinyl Experience.
When I was young, living confusion, deep despair. When I was younger, living illusion, freedom, power. When I was young.
Vinyl Experience, Lennon's last songs, like that one, Borrowed Time, and others like Watching the Wheels, Beautiful Boy, and Grow Old With Me, reflect the fragility of life and became ironic after his murder. Author Keith Elliott Greenberg has collected the details of Lennon's last days and the parallel stories of those whose lives intersected with his on that tragic day, December 8th, 1980, the day John Lennon died. That's the book's title, and Keith, Welcome.
Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here. What happened on December 8th, 1980 is something that we all can relate to. Anyone who was around at that time, 30 years later, we all have the stories to share. And I also interviewed regular New Yorkers. I can't emphasize that enough. All of us were affected by this because John was one of us. He had chosen to be a New Yorker. He could have lived anywhere in the world, but he chose to live here. And he would have stayed here, as evidenced by the fact that after John was murdered, Yoko didn't flee New York. She remained in New York.
Not only that, she didn't flee the Dakota apartment building.
No, she stayed in the same building like a regular New Yorker. Like some woman in the Bronx, someone gets murdered in front of her building, she doesn't go anywhere else. She stays in Co-op City or wherever she lives.
Some of the people that you'll hear mentioned in the next song are obscure enough to require a wiki search. Others are very top of mind. The song Tim Curry's I Do the Rock, and the reference to John and Yoko farming beef is not just a throwaway line, it was a literal reference to one of their other business ventures.
That's right. Yoko was a very astute businesswoman, and John and Yoko had become very wealthy because of it, and one of their businesses, thanks to Yoko, was running a beef farm.
He did sit well, giving readings, 14 Moscow Road. Osbert giving champagne parties, Sashi's got it colder. Gertrude's hanging pictures, Alice making tea. Me, I do the only thing that still makes sense to me. I do the rock. I do the rock, rock. John and Yoko farming beef, raising protein water. Sometimes they make love and art inside the Dakota. Rodney's feeling sexy, Mick is really frightfully bold. Me, I do the only thing that stops me going old. I do the rock. I do the rock, rock. I do the rock, rock, rock. Well, it's stimulating. Solzhenitsyn feels exposed, built a barbed wire prison. Just 6 feet under, but his baby still got rhythm. Einstein celebrating 10 decades, but I'm afraid philosophy is just too much responsibility for me.
sunshine it is. That song always brightens spirits because it's such a goofy, crazy song. But it's a one-hit wonder for Tim Curry.
Of Rocky Horror Picture Show fame.
Absolutely. I Do the Rock. Some people who would have been very top of mind in 1979 and 1980, including
they mentioned Governor Brown and Linda, Governor Jerry Brown of California and Linda Ronstadt, his girlfriend at the time. And what's so bizarre is 30 years later, who's the governor of California? Jerry Brown again.
We can only wonder what the world would be like if we had Lennon for another 30 years, and that's one of the bittersweet aspects of what we're doing today here on The Vinyl Experience, looking back at December 8th, 1980, the day John Lennon died. My guest, Keith Elliott Greenberg, the author of that book, Our Music, all played from vinyl, songs that might have been on John's iPod if such a gizmo existed back in 1980, but he had the FM radio. He liked to listen late at night in earphones, and he was hearing songs that made him think, gee, I could fit into this world because the so-called new wave music that I'm hearing is old hat.
We were at the beach. Everybody had matching towels. Somebody went under a dock, and there they saw a rock.
In the case of the B-52s, he would remark, they're doing Yoko.
Indeed, that's right, Rock Lobster, which has all these squeals on it and nonsensical allusions, like he talks about, there goes a catfish, in flew a sea robin, watch out for that piranha. That's like something Yoko would have been blurting out into a microphone during her Fluxus period, way before she ever met John.
Let's spin some of the 1980 vinyl that Lennon admired. In his final interview with Rolling Stone, John gave thumbs up to this Bruce Springsteen song, which was originally intended for the Ramones. He also caught the Buddy Holly influence in the Cars' first hit, and he dug the danceable groove of Blondie's punky new wave. Here they are, off the original LPs, on The Vinyl Experience.
Everybody's got a hungry heart. Lay down your money and your prayers. I'll get you.
vinyl experience. If iPods existed in 1980, John Lennon probably would have had those on his because he mentioned those tunes in the interviews that he gave at the time of his comeback in late 1980. We are remembering that time with Keith Elliott Greenberg, author of December 8th, 1980, the day John Lennon died. And Keith, it's possible that bands of the day like Blondie or Cheap Trick, who jammed with John on the early Double Fantasy sessions, might have joined him on tour had he lived. Now, you and I have both been in contact with Blondie members about this, and you have heard from co-founder Chris Stein?
Chris Stein sent a text message that says, we brought a copy of Auto American to the Dakota and left it for him after we heard that he'd been playing it a lot, and I think he was always a fan. And then Chris goes on to say that John had sent Ringo a postcard saying, hey, Ringo, why don't you do a song like Heart of Glass, the Blondie song? And then Sean Lennon has said that one of the first songs he remembers as a small child hearing at the Dakota was The Tide Is High.
Keith, I chatted recently with Deborah Harry, and she had this to say about a potential Blondie-Lennon meeting in December 1980.
We had Bob Gruen, who is a friend of his, a photographer, who had been documenting rock and roll performances and musicians for many years, was a friend of ours, and he had taken lots of pictures of me at Max's and at Blondie, at CBGB's, and so on and so forth. And of course, he had I think he had done books with John. So he was always going up and visiting John and Yoko. He was a friend of theirs. So we were actually just about to hook up with John, and we had sent up a bunch of things that we wanted him to hear and see, and so we were sort of laying the groundwork for a personal introduction.
Deborah Harry calling into the Vinyl Experience. Julian Lennon also visited recently, and he had this recollection of music that John played from his own record collection.
On the occasions when you did visit your dad in the Dakota, there was a jukebox, right?
Indeed there was, yeah.
So what was in that jukebox? Did you ever play anything from it?
I remember hearing some old classics, but more along the lines of sort of crooner songs, like whether it was from Sinatra or, from those days gone by. No rock and roll stuff, as far as I recall, at that point in time, anyway.
Interesting. Old Blue Eyes.
Yeah.
Had a hold on a very famous fan. That's very interesting.
Indeed.
Thank you, Julian.
My pleasure.
The last song that John Lennon recorded was not a vocal, it was an instrumental. He laid down a guitar solo on the very last session that he and Yoko were working on the evening of December 8th of 1980. It was for the song Walking on Thin Ice. He was prepping her to be a solo artist.
Yeah, he was anticipating that Yoko would have a number one hit with this song. And indeed, it was probably Yoko's highest song ever on the charts. And at the moment that John Lennon was killed, he happened to have the session tapes in his hand of Walking on Thin Ice.
Late in the afternoon, after a busy day of photo sessions, recording a radio interview, John left the building to go to the Record Plant recording studio, which is on 44th Street off of 8th Avenue. On the way out, he meets a fan who has him sign an album. That fan, only a few hours later, would be his murderer.
That's right. And again, John Lennon was in a frame of mind where he was reaching out to his fans. Mark David Chapman came up to him, puts the album in front of him, and John Lennon signs it, and somebody takes a picture of it. What's interesting is, as John walks away, he stops and he turns back to Mark David Chapman and he says, "Do you need anything else?" There was a weirdness there. Now, I'm not saying John knew that this man would take his life, but he sensed that there was something different than normal, and that's why he stopped and looked back at this fan.
The recording session would go through the evening hours. The Lennons did not have a chance to have dinner. When it was done, at about 10:30 in the evening, they left the record plant studio, said goodnight to their producer, Jack Douglas, got into a waiting limousine, and they had two options, either to stop at one of the great New York landmarks, the Stage Deli, on 45th Street and 7th Avenue.
Still there?
Or go straight home. And John opted for the latter because he wanted to tuck his kid in.
That's right. He wanted to get back to his family. That's what John Lennon was like in 1980. He had made a lot of mistakes with his first son, Julian. John had been swept up in Beatlemania, and as a result, Julian felt a sense of abandonment, and he wasn't going to repeat that mistake with Sean.
I knew a girl who tried to walk across the lake. Of course it was winter, when all this was ice. Hell of a thing to do, you know. They say the lake is as big as the ocean. I wonder if she knew about it.
When the limo pulled up to the curb at West 72nd Street, it's about a quarter to 11. And Yoko emerges first, trailing quite a bit behind her. Is John, who's carrying something.
Yes, he's carrying the session tapes from Walking on Thin Ice, the song that they'd recorded that day, the song that he thought would bring Yoko her first number one hit.
At the moment that Chapman is actually waiting for Lennon to walk past the curb from the limousine to the archway of the Dakota, there's a moment when Lennon and Chapman are actually aware of each other's presence.
Yes, because Lennon passes by Chapman. And Chapman walks like he's going home for the night. Okay, I've seen my idol, like so many other fans. Now I'm going to call it a night. It's a cold night in New York.
And yet John didn't turn around this time and say, "Is there something else you wanted?"
No.
Something told him instinctively to just keep moving and go in. It's late. Forget this guy.
You know, I don't even know if there was something instinctively. He may have had stuff on his mind. He wanted to tuck his son in at night. Sometimes when I want to get home and see my family, I don't stop and chat with the neighbors because I know my daughter's going to be asleep if I waste another 5 minutes.
And, of course, we all know what happens next. Well, one of the first friends to rally around Yoko was Elton John, the composer of songs like Funeral for a Friend and Candle in the Wind, which years later would serve as an elegy for Princess Diana. Well, he, after all, was Sean's godfather, and Elton was the first to compose and release a tribute song in the aftermath of Lennon's murder.
What happened here as the New York sunset found an empty garden among the flagstones there. Ooh, lived here. He must have been a gardener that cared a lot, who weeded out the tears and grew a good crop. Now it all looks strange. It's funny how one insect can damage so much grain. And what's it for, this little empty garden by the brownstone door, and in the cracks along the sidewalk, nothing grows no more. Tears and grew a good crop, and we are so amazed. We're crippled and we're dazed. A gardener like that one, no one can replace. And I've been knocking, but no one answers.
Some say he farmed his best in younger years, but he'd have said that roots grow stronger if only he could hear.
Vinyl Experience, songs inspired by Lennon. Freddie Mercury came up with a song called Life is Real on the album Hot Space.
Hey,
John Lennon wrote Hide Your Love Away about his former manager, Brian Epstein's homosexuality, and how hard it must have been to hide that. In England at the time, it was illegal. Elton John is Sean Lennon's godfather. You know, both of these very significant people in John Lennon's life, openly gay men. You have to wonder, when Freddie Mercury died of AIDS, what John Lennon would have said about the whole AIDS epidemic.
The Vital Experience, our topic today, December 8th, 1980, the day John Lennon died. It's a book by Keith Elliott Greenberg, and many of John Lennon's friends would respond quickly with tributes. One was by his Central Park West neighbor, Paul Simon.
I was reading a magazine and thinking of a rock and roll song. The year was 1954, and I hadn't been playing that long, when a man came on the radio, and this is what he said. He said, I hate to break it to his fans, but Johnny Ace is dead, yeah.
His song, The Late Great Johnny Ace, refers not only to the death of John Lennon, but to an early rock and roller whose name was Johnny Ace, who was the first tragic loss in the rock experience.
It was the year of the Beatles, it was the year of the Stones, it was 1964. I was living in London with the girl from the song Stone, the year after JFK. We were staying up all night and giving the days away.
And then he talks about in the song, it's really very moving, about a cold December evening walking through the Christmas tide. This was the same night that the Christmas tree was lit in Rockefeller Center.
December 8th, 1980.
That's right. And he talks about a stranger coming up and asking him if he heard that John Lennon had died. That's very eerie, because we all remember where we were on that night and how shocking the information was, how jarring it was when we found out about it.
On a cold December, I was walking through the Christmas time, when a stranger came up and asked me if I had heard John Lennon die. And the two of us went to this bar, and we stayed to close the flames. And every song we played was for the late great Johnny Ace.
The Vinyl Experience. Songs about Lennon by those who knew him best, the other Beatles. George Harrison had a song that was not All Those Years Ago. It was a completely different song. He had already recorded it before John Lennon was killed, and he enlisted the help of Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr,
That's right.
with whom he was on better terms than John Lennon. Unfortunately, George and John were the most estranged of the Beatles as of December 8th of 1980.
Right. At that point, there had been a book written, I, Me, Mine, by George Harrison. He didn't really acknowledge John's contributions to his career at that point. John was a little bit hurt. George was hurt because he felt that Paul and John had held him back a bit. I'm sure in time they would have bridged that void, but on December 8th, 1980, sadly, it hadn't been bridged yet.
This song would be re-recorded with different lyrics in tribute to John by George Harrison in the aftermath. But where was George Harrison on December 8th, 1980?
George Harrison was home at his estate, and George Harrison's brother was so nervous about having to approach him and tell him that John Lennon had died that he very gingerly placed the newspaper in front of George at breakfast, and that's how George found out. And George was quite devastated. He immediately called Yoko to emphasize that despite his estrangement with John, he loved him very much, and Yoko said it was okay. John loved him too, and that seemed to put George's mind at ease.
Shouting all about love. Well, they cheated you like a dog, and you were the one who had made it so clear all those years ago.
someone, the devil's best friend, someone who offended all. We're living in a bad dream. They've forgotten all about mankind. And you were the one they backed up to the wall all those years ago. You were the one who imagined it all those years ago.
December 8th, 1980, the day John Lennon died. It's our focus today on the vinyl experience, and our guest is Keith Elliott Greenberg. So, Keith, where was Paul McCartney on December 8th, 1980?
Paul McCartney had a tendency to turn the telephone off. When the news finally came through to Paul that John had died, he was really very devastated, Paul. And he had made several statements about how much he loved John and how hurt he felt by this murder. And sadly, the one soundbite that went around the world was Paul saying, "Drag, isn't it?" as if he was being callous, and he was anything but.
On December 9th of 1980, Paul did go to work, and he was working on a record with Beatles producer George Martin.
What nobody knew at the time was Paul and George Martin had been crying all day and trying to drink away their sorrow, and they'd been hugging each other and telling John Lennon stories. And then he made that remark, "Drag, isn't it?" And everybody thought, hey, he doesn't care.
The record that they were working on would become Paul's first post-Wings album, Tug of War. And on that album, a song that Paul continues to perform today in concert in tribute to John. It's the song, Here Today.
And if I said I really knew you well, what would your answer be? If you were here today, ooh, here today. Well, knowing you, you'd probably laugh and say that we were worlds apart. If you were here today, but as for me, I still remember how it was before, and I am holding back the tears, no, no. Ooh, love you. Ooh. What about the time we met? Well, I suppose that you could say that we were playing hard to get. Didn't understand the thing, but we could always sing. What about the night we cried? Because there wasn't any reason left to keep it all inside. Never understood a word, but you were always there with a smile. And if I say I really loved you and was glad you came along, then you were here today. Ooh, for you were in my song.
Vinyl Experience. Songs about Lennon, and now one by Lennon that really is kind of his epitaph.
With me. They talk about growing old together. She and John would have been growing old together right now, and the two of them envision this being a song that people would play at their weddings.
The guest has been Keith Elliott Greenberg. The book, December 8th, 1980, The Day John Lennon Died. In a short time that we had with John Lennon, as vibrant a personality as he was, and continues to be through recordings, we couldn't have imagined then that the absence of Lennon would affect us even more.
Right, and people think, oh, did John Lennon's legacy end on December 8th, 1980? No, it didn't end at all. John Lennon's legacy continues to this day. It's a very rich legacy, and he still inspires a lot of people.
Look out.
I wanted to say to John, you were good, you know, you were good. And sadly, he was not right next to me, and I couldn't say it. And I feel a bit guilty that, well, we were partners, so I was not keeping saying you were good when he was around. But now, when I listen to his songs, I realize that he was a very special songwriter for us all, for the world.
Everybody's hustling.
for a buck and a dime. I'll scratch your back and you scratch mine. I've been across to the other side. I've shown you everything. I got nothing to hide. And still you ask me, do I love you? What it is, what it is. All I can tell you is it's all show. All I can tell you.
Nobody needs you. Your side down.